From the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're going to talk today about the issue of gay rights in China. Homosexuality isn't illegal in China, yet lesbian, gay, bi, and trans people there still largely live their lives in the shadows. But beyond this, there are some other aspects to gay life in mainland China that are strikingly different, not only from the U.S., but even from some of China's neighbors. For one thing, many, and probably most gay men in China, marry straight women, and they don't tell their brides that they are gay. Now, there isn't great data on this, but by one frequently cited estimate, there are about 20 million gay men in China, and about 80% of them are married to a woman. Now, as you might expect, this is often a recipe for unhappy marriages, and there's even a Chinese word for the women who unwittingly marry a closeted gay man, tongqi, which translates roughly to gay man's wife. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to hear more about this phenomenon and some of the societal pressures that lead to it. But first, we're going to talk about how some of the perceptions of LGBT people are and aren't changing in China. Joining us first from Berlin, Germany, is Fan Popo. He's a well-known Chinese filmmaker and gay rights activist who's been the director of the Beijing Queer Film Festival. He's also sued the government after his film Mama Rainbow, about Chinese mothers who have embraced their gay or lesbian children, was banned from Chinese streaming sites. Fan Popo, welcome to Global Journalist. So,
Popo,
if you could just tell us, you've been an outspoken advocate for gay rights in China. Just give us an overview of sort of the general attitudes towards gay and lesbian people now.
I think in our traditional culture, we have certain tolerance on homosexuality and cross-dressing and transgender. In the same time, family value is very strong. Obviously, most of parents they want children to get married, but we don't have a marriage equality or same-sex partnership in China. So being gay, that means you won't probably won't take the family name. This has been a very big challenge. And in the same time, we get a lot of censorship from media about LGBT issues from the government, and there is very little information about being LGBT, but these years I can see that people slowly changing and really improve a lot from my point of view.
And what about sort of outside of big cities in China? Is it possible for someone to live as an openly gay man, as an open lesbian?
Yeah, of course, because China is a very big country, we have a lot of region difference. There is difference between urban China and the rural area and the big city and the smaller city, East Coast and the Northwest. So I think because a lot of small cities, it's very hard for them to get information and to see other people who are LGBT or family members of LGBT. Because personally, I'm from a very small village. When I come out to my dad, he was saying, "Well, why I didn't see any other gay people in our village or town?" I just told him, you know, if I stay in this small town, I will probably also need to get married and living a very unhappy life. So I think because until now, in small towns, gay people are very invisible. That doesn't mean that they didn't exist.
And so how did your father react to that? Like, what are your options if you are gay or lesbian in a small place in a village in China like you were?
So when I told him about this, he just said, "Oh, I have a friend. He's always doing very feminine things, and also he live very happy life, very unhappy life with his wife because he barely touched his wife. Do you think?" And he always go to best house. "And do you think he could be gay?" So I was saying, "Yeah, probably may." He sounds very gay. "So dad, do you want me to live a life like him?" And my dad said no. So you will see that if you give them more information, they can understand. So my dad, slowly, with a few months of communication, he can accept my secondation and also what I'm doing now.
So in other words, your choices in a village were either to get married to a woman or to move someplace else where you could live more openly then.
Yeah, I think it's almost the only two options you can choose if you are, you know, from a very small village.
And besides your father, what about the other people in your life? How did they react?
I came out I didn't come out until when I come to Beijing in 2003 to study, because in a small town, most of people that don't have any idea about homosexuality. And because I studied in Beijing Film Academy, most of my classmates are very open and supportive. Only one of my professor, he was very homophobia, and he gave me a lot of very difficult time. But in the I think in people around me then all know about my sexuality and sexual orientation.
And I understand some of your films, one of them, Mama Rainbow, it was removed from the internet. You actually sued the government and won in court in order to have this restored. What's sort of the government's general attitude towards homosexuality?
So they just didn't admit that deleted my film. It's still a very big mystery that who was the people who was in charge and what they don't like about my video. Because in China, the censorship is very the regulation is itself is very blurry. So there is no certain bottom line. And I had so I had this lawsuit about 2 years ago. Although in the end I had won the case, but still my film has been banned by most of the video site in China.
And what about how are gays and lesbians, how are they depicted in the media? Are there TV shows and popular movies about gays and lesbians?
There's very little information about LGBT on mainstream media. So on TV, there is very little programs could mention about that. Only this year's online series had been more and more popular. There was some really popular online series had touched the topic, but they were also banned and taken down from all over the internet in China.
And one of your films, I understand it's called Be a Woman. It's about drag queens in China. What can you tell us about how trans people are viewed there? What is their place in Chinese society?
For a very long time, transgender was not only discriminated from the mainstream society, but also within the LGBT society. I remember when we were organizing the Queer Film Festival, very often I get audience come to me saying, "Oh, please don't show those films about the transgender. They made the mainstream people think we are all going to change our sex. We are, but I'm just falling in love with someone have the same gender with me. So that's the reason why I want to make this film, Be a Woman, to it's like a statement of mine to support my transgender friends. But now I can see there is a growth of a transgender movement these years. There are more and more transgender organizations had funded. And also last year there was a lawsuit case about a trans man sued his company, fired him not because of not wearing skirt. And this is a very landmark event for the transgender equality.
Fan Popo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. We're talking today about the lives of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and trans people in China. As we mentioned earlier, there are millions of gay men in China who marry straight women because of societal pressures. And to hear more about this and some other aspects of gay life in China, we're going to bring in three other guests who have followed this issue closely. Joining us from Providence, Rhode Island, is Casey Miller. He's an anthropologist at Brown University who studied the lives of gays and lesbians in China and is writing a book about sexuality in the country. From Auckland, New Zealand, we're joined by Benjamin Law. He's an Australia-based journalist and screenwriter and author of the book Geisha: Adventures in the Queer East. And from Phoenix, Arizona, is Richard Berger. He's the author of the book Behind the Red Door: Sex in China. Welcome to all of you. Casey Miller, let me start with you. I understand that as you were doing some research on sexuality in China, you encountered this Tong Chi phenomenon. What do we know about it? How widespread is it?
We're actually starting to learn more and more about the problem. Just over the last couple of years, we've started to see the first social science data emerge about the problem. But we still know very little about the lives of most Tong Chi women, the reasons why they marry their gay husbands, what their relationships are like with their husbands and children, and why they don't divorce or whether they divorce upon finding out that their husbands are gay or queer. There's actually a study that came out just last year in January 2016 in the journal Women in Health, which is some of the first and only data that's emerged on the topic. And it was an internet survey of 135 Tongchi women. It found that 97% did not know at the time of marriage that their husbands were gay or queer. 78% of the women in the sample did not get divorced for a variety of reasons, including worries about the kids, bringing shame to their families, worries about economic dependence on their husbands. They also found that there's very low rates of physical intimacy between Tongchi women and their husbands, with some 36% of respondents in the study reporting only having intercourse with their husbands a few times a year, and 43% reporting they had never kissed their husbands or been kissed by their husbands. There's also higher rates of physical or domestic abuse in these relationships, so 23% in this one small study compared to 7% in the general population, which is over three times as high. And also the study found that 92% of the respondents had symptoms of clinical depression, which is much higher than the general population.
Well, Benjamin Law, let me just turn this to Benjamin Law for a moment then. What can you tell us about some of the societal pressures that make this such a common phenomenon?
Well, when you're thinking about Chinese people, LGBTI people in China, I don't think you can really underestimate how much pressure there is to marry. And that's not simply pressure from parents to children either. That's pressure that people will feel within themselves. Coming from a Chinese background myself, so my parents are Hong Kong Cantonese in background, although I was born in Australia, I do have some sort of insight into that expectation to marry. It's also almost seen as part of adulthood, that's the next stage, that marriage grants you legitimacy within adult life. When you reach your 30s, especially in mainland China, that stigma against you starts to grow if you're unmarried. And that's kind of amplified in a few ways if you're in mainland China as well. Think about if you're a member of the one child policy generation, you kind of represent not just your parents' hopes about what they want out of a child, but also in some cases their social security and their ongoing welfare as well, like we heard before, the extension of the family name too. So in a lot of cases, that keenness to marry is also felt by the individual too, which explains why a lot of men, and increasingly of course the women they marry, find themselves in the situation of essentially being in what we would call in the West a closeted marriage.
And Richard Berger, if I could turn this to you, we heard Casey Miller giving us some of the statistics about the Tongchi phenomenon. And it does sound like this is sort of a recipe for unhappy marriages. 43% of women have never kissed their husband in these marriages, and the rates of depression are high, domestic abuse. If a woman discovers that her husband is gay, what sort of options does she have?
There is now support for Tongchi. There are websites they can go to. There are hotlines they can call where there's a lot of support. Women share stories. They discover that they're not the only one in a relationship where there's no sexual satisfaction, and they usually don't divorce. As my former speaker said, most of them stay married, maybe because of financial reasons, also because they've had a child and they need to please their parents. It's a terribly, terribly tragic thing that 20 or 40 million Chinese people have to live behind a front, have to live behind a lie. And that is a true tragedy.
And Richard, what is the history of this? Is this an old phenomenon, or is this something that is more modern?
It's more modern. China used to be quite open about homosexuality. That back in ancient times, it was considered prestigious to have a male lover. I mean, it's only post Mao that homosexuality was declared a form of spiritual pollution. And it was literally wiped out under Mao. A black curtain came down and he wrapped the country in a cocoon of chastity. Gay men were forced to look for sex in public bathrooms, which was terribly dangerous. And lesbians had practically no way to satisfy their own desires. It took a long time for that to change. We didn't really see light coming out of the tunnel until maybe the late 1980s, early 1990s.
And Casey Miller, if I could turn this back to you. We talked about Tongchi, where there are women who are sort of deceived into marrying gay men because of societal pressures. What about the opposite? Are there also straight men who end up marrying lesbians?
Yes, there actually are. It's called Tongfu, or husbands of lesbian women. And very little is known about Tongchi as a phenomenon. Even less is known about these husbands of lesbian women. But there are there definitely are some examples that are emerging in the literature. And some of these men are being connected with resources, support groups, and hotlines, like Richard spoke of. In general, it's the consensus seems to be that these men have it slightly better than their female counterparts, that is, Tongchi, or women who are married to gay men, because it's easier for the men to divorce their wives, and it's seen as less stigmatizing for a man to divorce and then remarry. I would just add to some of the early discussion, some of the reasons why Tongchi women, women who are married to gay men, don't divorce are due to inequalities in Chinese marriage law. So in China, if a property deed, so an apartment, for example, is in the husband's name, after divorce, the property goes with the husband and is not divided equally. And because China is a patriarchal society, there's often a lot of pressure for women to sign over deeds to property to their husband's name. And also, in China's marriage law, as Popo said earlier, the Chinese government does not recognize homosexuality or homosexual relationships. So although an affair is often grounds for divorce and even compensation, if the affair is with a same-sex partner, the courts have no legal remedy. So Tongchi who seek to divorce their husbands after finding out that they're gay or oftentimes having affairs with other men find that they have no legal recourse in the courts.
And Benjamin Law, I understand that there are also kind of sort of form or arranged marriages where a gay man and a lesbian woman will knowingly marry each other sort of as a cover and then sort of go on with their lives. How common is that? How do people find each other?
Well, I found when I was researching my book several years ago that one common way that young gay and lesbian women in China would connect would be with each other, to sham marry each other, because with that pressure to marry getting increasingly heavy as you get older, people find it more convenient to simply just hold a sham. I mean, for them, it's either the option of getting into a marriage with someone who's completely unknowing with their sexuality. But if you're at the stage of your life where you do actually, if you are actually aware that you are a gay person or a lesbian, this is an incredibly convenient, at least on surface level, convenient option to do, which is to find each other with your set list of prerequisites and to hold your elaborate wedding. When I was over in China, there were websites and classifieds forums where gay men and gay women were seeking each other out, and they would find each other with, say, their criteria was a marriage in law. Other people would say that their criteria was, no, we're only holding the ceremony, but nothing legal is going to be determined through this arrangement. Other people did want children. Other people wanted to share property as well. So it's almost like this strange game show where you've got a bullet point list of what you need out of this fake marriage and they have theirs. Often people get married, they go back to the regions where their parents are, and they will go back to the cities to lead their lives with their actual partners. And you hear these incredibly, they would be hilarious if they weren't kind of tinged with tragedy as well, but these stories of people holding great big elaborate sham marriages where they basically need to swap partners with each other in the hotel corridors at night, or exchange money in the middle of a highway or something like that. And that's becoming increasingly common to the point where since I wrote the book, apparently there are apps making it more convenient for gay men to find their match with gay women.
You're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Today we're discussing some of the challenges for lesbian, gay, bi, and trans people in China. We're joined by Casey Miller of Brown University, Benjamin Law, the author of the book Geisha, Adventures in the Queer East, and Richard Berger, author of the book Behind the Red Door, Sex in China. For more Global Journalist, you can visit our website, globaljournalist.org. There you'll find our ongoing coverage of underreported international issues, including an interview with a Tongchi, or gay man's wife, in China, who divorced her husband after learning he was gay. You can also check out Global Journalist on Facebook or Twitter, or subscribe to the videocast of this program on YouTube. Richard Berger, let me turn this to you now. I know that until fairly recently, homosexuality was officially considered a psychiatric disorder, a mental illness in China. How widespread is that view today?
Homosexuality was actually at first listed as a criminal, as something you could be arrested for under Mao, when homosexuality was literally wiped out. However, in 1997, it was delisted as a mental illness, and we rapidly saw the rise of gay bars, even gay bathhouses, in Beijing and Shanghai. This was an incredibly rapid progress that was made for homosexuals. Now, I would say the urbane people in the coastal cities like Beijing and Shanghai are basically comfortable with homosexuals, as long as it's not in their immediate family. If they're in your immediate family, you're under pressure to get them married. But I find increasingly, especially with younger people, homosexuality is a far more acceptable form of self-expression. In 2009, when I was living in Beijing, there was a wedding, a mock wedding of homosexuals in the middle of Tiananmen Square. This received huge attention. China Daily, the biggest newspaper in China, splashed a photo of the couple kissing themselves at Tiananmen Square. And all the feedback was positive about it. Other Chinese newspapers have featured ceremonial weddings of lesbians. So I wouldn't be surprised if after a few generations, homosexuality is actually legalized in China. We are nowhere near that now. It's still too much of a taboo, but I see we're heading in that direction.
And Casey Miller, if you could pick up on this point, you know, for many years in the United States and other countries, if you came out as gay, oftentimes your family members or others would pressure you into going to sort of a conversion therapy or talking to a psychiatrist. Is that something that happens still in China?
Yes, it is something that's happened and that still happens. There was a famous court case recently where a man who had been pressured to go to a conversion, a so-called therapy program by his parents and felt that he was psychologically harmed by his participation in the program, actually sued the program and won in court, and also sued an online search site that provided him an advertisement and a link where he actually clicked through to find this this gay therapy program. So they're being increasingly legally discouraged in China, as they are in other countries, including the United States. But this is another form of pressure that's often brought to bear upon queer people in China who do come out to their parents. But it's important to note that most queer people in China, at least according to my research and that of others, are not out to their parents or their extended family members. Only a relatively small portion of people take the step to come out. Coming out is really not seen in China as a viable option by a lot of queer people, because they're afraid that it will lead to harm to their parents, to social avoidance, to stigma or discrimination. And those few people in my study who were out to their parents, either lesbians or gay men, found that coming out to their parents actually did not decrease the pressure that they had from their parents to get married. So a lot of times when...
Though they went to their parents and told them that they're gay or lesbian, they still felt pressure from their parents to get married and have children.
Yeah, definitely. I had one informant who told me that when he came out to his parents as gay and said he wasn't going to marry, his parents, after a lot of work, said that we can accept that you're gay, but we cannot accept that you won't get married. And he ended up getting married. So a lot of times, these marriages to women without their knowledge of their husbands being gay, it's not just the husband that's keeping the secret from them, it's their entire extended family, including their parents-in-law.
And Benjamin Law, if I could turn the issue to Taiwan, which is culturally similar to China in many ways. I understand there the Taiwanese legislature is close to legalizing same-sex marriage. So how is it that sort of the culture, the environment for gays and lesbians in Taiwan is so different from that in mainland China?
It's interesting. Here over in Australia, where I'm based, we often joke that we expect Taiwan to pass same-sex marriage before we do. Even though there is a popular will amongst the Australian people, and it's been on the agenda for well over a decade here, when we observe overseas territories, including Taiwan, we say, wow, there's kind of a political kind of push and movement there that seems much stronger than in the political classes in Australia. Taiwan, to an extent, like Hong Kong, which is where my family is originally from as well, their conversations are quite markedly different from what I understand to mainland China as well. Those discussions about democracy kind of lead, perhaps, arguably, to a culture where discussion about these things and are more robust. The idea of lobbying is more transparent as well. So from what I understand, Taiwan is quite far ahead. My research didn't necessarily lead me there specifically, but a lot of the people that I spoke to in Beijing within the LGBTI community looked to Taiwan as kind of a model and kind of a source of hope that at some stage, hopefully, mainland China would get there as well.
And Richard Berger, I wanted to ask you as well about sort of where the roots of homophobia come from in China. In the West and many other countries, it's often rooted in religious texts, and that homosexuality is viewed as sort of immoral or prohibited by Christian texts or Muslim texts. In China, that doesn't exactly seem to be the case. Is that fair to say? Where is this coming from traditionally?
There's no gay bashing in China. There's none of that religious fomented hatred of gays. It's a stigma. It's still a taboo, but it's not. You won't find beatings of gay men like you will in some cities in America. Very, very different situation. I think the at the heart of the matter for stigmatization, it really took shape under Mao when he did shut down sexuality altogether. He wiped out prostitution. Having sex with a man or a woman having sex with a woman was a punishable criminal offense and a sign of mental illness. Now, it's a long time since Deng Xiaoping lifted the curtain on China in the late 1980s, and yet the stigma remains. It's ingrained in the Chinese conscience, I'm afraid. There are signs that it's getting better and better, but there's still quite a stigma. It's still a taboo. People still recoil from homosexuality mostly. Now, you always have to draw make the dichotomy that it's different in the big bustling cities like Shanghai and Beijing, where it's easier to be a gay person in the anonymous city.
Well, I'm sorry, Richard, we're just about out of time here, so we're going to have to leave it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute of the Missouri School of Journalism. Many thanks to Fan Popo, Casey Miller, Benjamin Law, and Richard Berger for joining us. Our lead producer is Jinhong Chen, and our assistant producers are Weiming Bao, Lily Cusack, Fallon Page, and Sophia Sader. Our visuals editor is Alyssa Blyle, with graphics production from Jonah McCown. Kyle Felling of KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio, is our audio engineer. Travis McMillan is our director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.